She went to slam the door, but Moss grabbed it. "We'd like to speak to Linda, please, if she's here." "You've got someone in custody, haven't you? What more do you need from the family?" the woman repeated. "We're still building our case, madam. We believe Linda will be able to help us confirm a few details which could lead to a swift conviction," said Moss. The old woman regarded them, eyes darting from side to side under the hooded lids, the skin crinkling and twitching, reminding Erica of a chameleon. She opened the door and stood to one side to let them in. "And wipe your feet," she said, eyeing the wet pavement outside. They followed her through to an open-plan seating area decorated in white. Along the back wall, an enormous clear-glass conference table glowed and changed colour. Adorning the walls were photos of the previous work Jocasta Floristry had undertaken. Society weddings, product launches. The old lady vanished through a door at the back, and a moment later, Linda emerged, carrying armfuls of yellow daffodils. She wore a long black A-line skirt, and another cat jumper poked out from behind a white apron. This time it was a giant tabby cat with languid eyes. "My mother isn't here. She's taken to her bed," she said. Her tone of voice seemed to suggest that her mother was slacking off. She crossed to the large table, laid the daffodils on the glass, and began to sort them into bunches. Erica and Moss joined her at the table. "What are you doing here, DCI Foster? I thought you'd been taken off the case." "Surely you of all people should know not to believe everything you read in the press," said Erica. "Yes, journalists, they're all beasts. One of the tabloids described me as a moon-faced spinster." "I'm sorry to hear that, Linda. Are you?" snapped Linda, fixing them with a stare. Erica took a deep breath. "When we spoke to you before, we asked if you had any information that could help us with our inquiries. You failed to mention to us that Andrea had a second phone," said Erica. Linda went back to bunching daffodils. "Well," said Moss. "You didn't ask me a question, you made a statement," said Linda. "Okay, did Andrea have a second phone?" asked Erica. "No, I wasn't aware she did," said Linda. "She reported it stolen in June 2014, but kept the handset and bought a pay-as-you-go SIM card," said Moss. "So what? You're here on behalf of the insurance company to investigate insurance fraud?" "We found your criminal record, Linda. You have quite the rap sheet. Assault, shoplifting, credit card fraud, vandalism," said Erica. Linda stopped bunching the daffodils and looked up at them. "That was the old me. I've found God now," she said. "I'm a different person. If you look close enough, we all have a past we regret." "So when did you find God?" asked Moss.
"I beg your pardon?" asked Linda.
"Well, you're still on probation, and you caused £8,000 worth of damage to Giles Osborne's offices 4 months ago. Why did you do it?"
"I was jealous," said Linda. "Jealous of Andrea, of Giles. She found someone, and, as I'm sure you can imagine, I'm still looking."
"And what did Andrea and Giles have to say about your harassment?"
"I apologized. I said it would never happen again, and we all made up."
"He forgave you for killing his cat, too?" said Moss.
"I did not kill his cat," cried Linda. "I would never do something like that. Cats are the most beautiful, intelligent creatures. You can stare into their eyes, and I think they know all the answers. If only they could talk."
Erica shot Moss a look not to go too far. Linda's puddingy face clouded over, and she slammed her hand down on the glass table.
"I didn't do it. I am not a liar."
"Okay, okay," said Moss. "Can you tell us who this man is in the picture with Andrea?" She placed the photo of Andrea at the party with the dark-haired man next to the pile of daffodils.
"I don't know," said Linda, glancing at it.
"Look at it properly, please, Linda," said Moss, holding up the photo in front of her face. Linda looked at the photo and back at Moss.
"I told you I don't know."
"How about this one?" said Moss, pulling out the picture of Linda with Andrea. "This photo was taken of you and Andrea on the same night at the same bar. He probably took this photo." Linda looked at the photo again and seemed to compose herself.
"You see, officer, your use of the word probably is quite telling. I came to that bar a few minutes before closing for a drink. I'd been working here all evening. When I arrived, Andrea was alone. Whoever she'd been there with had gone. She'd waited for me so we could have a drink and a catch-up before the family Christmas events took over. This man may well have been there, but not at the same time as me.
Did Andrea mention him?
Andrea always had a lot of male attention when she went out. I only agreed to meet her if she promised not to go on about boys all evening.
Don't you like boys?
Boys? Linda snorted. You know, two intelligent women can pass an evening without having to talk about men, surely.
What was the name of the bar? Asked Erica.
I think it's called Contagion.
Who was Andrea there with?
I told you, I don't know. Andrea had a revolving door of party mates.
Where was Giles? I would have thought that he'd left by then so he could avoid having to see me. Because you harassed him, vandalized his offices and killed his... Finished Moss.
How many more times? I did not kill Clara,
cried Linda. Tears welled up in her eyes. She pulled down a sleeve of the tabby jumper and wiped her eyes.
Clara was... She was a lovely animal. She would let me hold her. She wouldn't let many other people, not even Giles.
Then who poisoned her?
I don't know, said Linda softly.
She pulled out a lump of bald tissue paper from the pocket of her jumper and scrubbed at her eyes until they started to look red.
What can you tell us about this? Asked Moss, placing down the clear evidence bag, which contained the letter that Erica had received.
What's this? No, 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 I don't know anything, Linda said, fresh tears appearing on her face.
I think Linda has been accommodating enough, said a voice from the back of the room. The Douglas Browns housekeeper with the hooded eyes had materialized and was coming toward them. If you want to talk to her further, perhaps we can arrange something more formal with the family solicitor in attendance.
Linda, this man, said Moss, tapping the photo of the handsome man with Andrea, is also a suspect in the rape and murder of three young Eastern European women over the past 2 years and the recent murder of an elderly lady.
Linda's eyes widened. The housekeeper was now holding out her arm for them to leave.
Linda, please contact us if you think of anything, however small, said Erica.
She either doesn't know who that guy is or she's a very good liar, said Moss, when they were back out on the street.
The only thing I believed her about was the cat. She didn't kill that cat, said Erica.
But we're not investigating cat murders.
I think we should go and pay Giles Osborne a visit, said Erica. See what he has to say about Linda and these photos.
Chapter 43
She's totally crazy, said Giles Osborne, to the point where she frightens me and many of my staff.
Moss and Erica sat in Giles's glass office, overlooking the back gardens of a row of terraced houses. A train clacked past behind the houses, and on an industrial estate to one side, four giant gas sumps rose up slick with rain. It seemed absurd to build such an elegant state-of-the-art building with such a dismal view. Giles looked as if he hadn't slept, and the skin on his face was loose and haggard. Erica also noted that he'd lost weight in the 2 weeks since Andrea's body was found.
The family is all aware of Linda, Giles went on. Seems she's been the black sheep for many years. She was thrown out of every school they put her in. When she was 9, she stabbed her teacher with a compass. The poor woman lost an eye.
So you think Linda has psychological problems? Asked Erica.
You make it sound far more mysterious and exotic than it is. She's just mad. It's a sort of tedious madness. But throw cash and an influential family into the mix and it's all heightened. The problem is that Linda knows there's no real consequences for her actions.
Yet, said Moss.
Giles shrugged. Sir Simon is always there to throw money at problems or have a word in an influential ear. In the end, he bought the teacher a house, and she lives in the top half and rents out the bottom. Almost worth losing an eye, don't you think?
There was silence. Another train clacked past on the track and blared its siren.
Sorry, I don't mean to be cruel. I'm arranging Andrea's funeral. I thought I'd be arranging our wedding. I never dreamed.
Linda is doing the flowers. She's insisted on the church she attends in Chiswick. I'm sitting here staring at a blank screen, trying to write her eulogy.
You have to know someone well to write their eulogy, said Moss.
Yes, you do,
said Giles.
Was Andrea religious?
Asked Erica, steering the conversation away from choppy waters.
No.
Is David?
If all nuns had big tits and low-cut tops, I'm sure he'd be a Catholic,
laughed Giles dryly.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, Lord, you have to take everything literally. It was a joke. David likes girls. He's young. He's remarkably normal. Takes after his mother more than...
Linda? Said Moss.
Yes, it's just him and Linda, said Giles. He wiped a tear away.
And Linda attends church regularly.
Yes, I'm sure God isn't too overjoyed at having to listen to her warped little prayers each night, said Giles.
Has Linda been to your office on many occasions? Asked Erica.
She came once with Andrea to see the place, then she showed up a couple of times alone.
When was this? Asked Moss.
July, August last year.
And why did she show up alone?
She came to see me, and it very quickly became apparent that she wanted to have sex.
And how did she indicate this? Asked Moss.
How do you bloody think?
Said Giles, growing red. He looked around, desperate to be somewhere else.
She lifted her sweater and exposed herself, told me that no one would know.
And what did you do?
I told her where to go. Even if she wasn't Andrew's sister, she's not exactly...
Not exactly...
Well, she's not exactly a looker, is she?
Moss and Erica remained silent.
Giles went on, As far as I'm aware, it's not a crime to find someone...
Repulsive, finished Erica.
I wouldn't quite go that far, said Giles.
And then things turned nasty. Linda vandalized your office and, according to the records, broke in and poisoned your cat.
Yes, and I don't know. You've read the case files, then?
Erica and Moss nodded.
I found myself with an unfortunate dilemma with Linda. Sir Simon asked me to drop the charges. What could I do?
I'm sorry to have to bring this up, Giles, but were you aware that Andrea was seeing other men when you were together? Asked Erica.
Giles paused.
I am now.
And how does that make you feel?
How do you bloody think that makes me feel? We were engaged. I thought she was the one.
Sure, she liked to flirt and play, and I should have seen it. But I thought she might calm down once we were married, and then we'd get sprogged up.
Sprogged up? Asked Erica. You mean have children?
Yes. I had no idea she had several men on the go. She was so stupid to get involved with that hateful creature Marco Frost. He scared Andrea with his obsession.
Do you think you have enough evidence to secure a prison sentence?
Erica looked at Moss.
Mr. Osborne, can I please ask you to take a look at this photo?
She placed the picture of Andrea with the dark-haired man on the table. He glanced at it.
No, I don't know him.
I didn't ask if you knew him. Please take a good look. This was taken just 4 days before Andrea disappeared.
Giles looked at the photo again.
Well, what am I looking at? He was probably one of the many men who make eyes at her.
What about this one?
Or this?
Or this?
Asked Erica.
She placed the series of photos in front of Giles. Andrea lying in bed with the dark-haired man, naked, her nipple drawn between his teeth. Then Andrea with her lips spread wide and his penis in her mouth.
What are you people doing?
Cried Giles, pushing his chair back and getting up. There were tears in his eyes.
How dare you come in here and take advantage of my goodwill?
Sir, these are from Andrea's second mobile phone, which we recently recovered. We showed these photos to you for a reason. They were taken just a few days before she vanished.
Giles stood and went to the glass door.
Thank you, officers. But I came into my office today to remember Andrea and write about her life. I have been asked to speak at her funeral, and you come here and sully my memories of her with hardcore pornographic photos.
He opened the door and indicated that they leave.
Sir, we believe that the man pictured with Andrea is also involved in the killing of 3 Eastern European girls who worked as prostitutes and the murder of an elderly lady. We also believe that Andrea was with this man on the night she died, explained Erica.
She looked at Moss. Giles saw their exchange.
Hang on. What about Marco Frost? I thought he was your man. Chief Superintendent Marsh assured me, and Assistant Commissioner Oakley, said Giles.
This is another line of inquiry we are pursuing, said Erica.
So you really have no idea who killed Andrea, yet you come over here hassling me on a hunch? Andrea was a flawed human being, and she had secrets. But all she did was love. All she wanted was to love.
Giles broke down, heaving and sobbing. He put his hand to his mouth. I just can't take this much longer. Please leave. Erica and Moss went back to the table, gathered up the photos and left, leaving Giles to sob.
Oh, fuck, said Moss, when they came back to the car parked a few roads away.
I said it, not you, said Erica. Boss, I have to go and report this all to DCI Sparks and Marsh.
I know, and that's fine.
Moss dropped Erica home, and despite all that had happened, all the revelations, Erica felt no closer to the truth, and very far away from being reinstated and getting her badge back. When she came into her living room, she switched on the light, seeing herself and the image of the room reflected back in the window. She went to the light and turned it off. She peered out of the window and down into the deserted street, but everything was still, quiet. Chapter 44. Over the next 2 days, Moss and Peterson had to appear in court and give evidence in the case involving an armed gunman at the supermarket in Sydenham. Much of the original investigative team into Andrea's death had been reassigned, now that Marco Frost had been charged with her murder. Erica was stuck in limbo, awaiting her misconduct hearing. She'd had a call from Marsh that morning.
Did you and Moss visit Linda Douglas Brown and Giles Osborne? He demanded.
Yes, sir.
I've had complaints from them both, and Sir Simon is threatening to make a formal complaint.
So you answer their calls, but not mine, Erica wanted to say. She bit her lip. Sir, I was there as an advisor to Moss. In both instances, I wasn't asked to produce identification.
Leave it out, Erica.
Sir, you are aware we recovered Andrea's second mobile phone?
Yes, I'm aware Moss filed her report.
And?
And you withheld evidence, the note you received.
But the note, sir, the note could have come from several places. Think back to your colleagues in Manchester.
There's still a great deal of anger towards you.
Marsh tailed off.
I'm sorry, that was unfair. I think, Erica, that you need to let this go.
What? Sir, have you seen the pictures?
Yes, I've seen the pictures, and I've read Moss's report very carefully. Although I can hear your voice when I read it. It still proves nothing. You have no grounds whatsoever to prove that this person, whoever he is, was involved in the deaths of Andrea or Ivy.
Or Tatiana, or Carolina, or Mirka.
What you have succeeded in doing is pissing off a lot of people, and metaphorically pissing on the memory of Andrea Douglas Brown.
But, sir, I didn't take those pictures. She
had a secret phone, for God's sake. Everyone has secrets.
I take it this conversation is off the record.
Yes, it is, Erica. And I must remind you that you are off the record. You are suspended. Now be sensible. Enjoy the full pay. I have it on good authority that if you lay low and keep your mouth shut, you'll be reinstated next month.
Lay low? Until what?
Marco Frost goes down for something he didn't do. Your orders come from who? She said, cutting him off.
Do they come from you, or Assistant Commissioner Oakley, or Sir Simon Douglas Brown?
Marsh was silent for a moment. It's Andrea Douglas Brown's funeral tomorrow. I don't want to see you there, and I don't want to hear you've been poking your nose in anywhere else.
And when this is over, and if you are reinstated, I'm going to make sure you're transferred to a nick a long way away. Have I made myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Marsh hung up. Erica sat back on the sofa, fuming. She cursed Marsh and then herself. Had she lost the plot? Were her instincts off on this one? No, they weren't. She had a cigarette and then went to pick out something suitable for a funeral. Chapter 45. Erica woke before it was light, and sat smoking and drinking coffee by the front window. The day stretched ahead in front of her full of obstacles, and she had to navigate it as smoothly as possible. She took a shower, and when she emerged just after 9, the sky still had a grey-blue tinge. Erica felt it wasn't right to be going to the funeral of someone so young. Perhaps the day was protesting, refusing to begin. She'd searched through her suitcase for something suitable to wear to Andrea's funeral, only to realise that most of her wardrobe was suitable for a funeral. At the bottom, she found the elegant black dress she'd worn over a year ago to a Christmas party organised by the Manchester Met Police. She remembered that night so clearly, the lazy afternoon beforehand, when she and Mark had made love, and then he'd run her a bath, pouring her favourite sandalwood oil into the steaming water. He'd sat on the side of the bath, and they'd chatted and drunk wine as she'd wallowed in the water. When it came to put on the dress, it had felt snug, and she'd protested she was fat. Mark had slipped his arm around her waist and pulled her into him, telling her she was perfect. She'd gone to the party proud to be on his arm, the warm feeling of being loved, of having someone special. Now as she pulled the dress on in front of the tiny mirror in the bare damp bathroom, it hung loose on her slender frame. She closed her eyes and tried to imagine that feeling of Mark beside her, pulling her into him for a hug. She couldn't conjure it up. She was alone. She opened her eyes and stared at her reflection. "I can't do this without you. Life. Everything," she said. Then in her head, she heard what Mark used to say when he thought she was being overdramatic. "Get off the cross, someone needs the wood." She laughed, despite her tears, saying, "I need to get a grip, don't I?" She wiped her eyes and reached for her makeup bag, untouched for months. She wasn't a massive fan of makeup, but she applied a little foundation and lipstick and stared at her reflection. She'd been wondering why she was going today, defying her bosses again. She was doing it for Andrea, for Carolina, Mirka, Tatiana, and for Mark. As with the girls, the person who'd killed him had never been caught. The Church of Our Lady of Grace and St. Edward on Chiswick High Road was a dreary, industrial-looking building. Its square, red-brick structure was more suited to being a Victorian water pumping station than a church. In its tall, plain tower, a bell tolled, but the traffic moved past unceasingly. A hearse gleamed in the grey morning light, the back windows packed with a rainbow of flowers. Erica waited on the opposite side of Chiswick High Road, watching between the traffic as the mourners filed in. She could just make out among the gloom of the front doors Simon, Giles and David. They were dressed in black suits and giving out the order of service. The mourners were well-dressed and much older than Andrea. As Erica watched, three former members of Tony Blair's cabinet climbed out of a sleek Mercedes and were greeted warmly by Simon when they entered the church. A small group of photographers had been permitted to attend the funeral, and they were stationed on the pavement at a distance, their shutters clicking almost respectfully. It was a story that needed no prompting or staging. A girl had died, far too young, and people were here to grieve. Of course, this wasn't the final chapter. Marco Frost was due to stand trial in the coming months, and no doubt the complex and sordid details of Andrea's life and death would be replayed, rehashed, and debated anew. However, for now, this was a full stop, the closing of one part. A smart BMW pulled up at the curb. Marsh and Assistant Commander Oakley emerged in black suits. Marcy and the Assistant Commander's smart middle-aged wife followed behind, also in black. They moved quickly to the church entrance, pausing to talk to Simon and Giles and to hug David, who seemed vulnerable, despite being taller than both Giles and his father. The last mourners to arrive were Andrea's mother, Linda, and the elderly lady with the hooded eyes. A limousine pulled up at the pavement, and Linda bustled out and round to the opposite door, where she helped Diana from the car. Both she and the old woman, whose name Erica still didn't know, were painfully thin, chic and elegant in black. Linda was swathed in a shapeless black tent, a dark woolen jacket, and she had a large wooden crucifix hung around her neck. Her mousy hair was neat, but looked as if someone had placed a bowl on her head and cut round it. Her face was devoid of makeup, and she looked, even in the chill, to be sweating. The photographers took a keen interest and clicked away. Diana and the old woman bowed their heads, but Linda stared up at the cameras defiantly. Erica waited a few more minutes, until it looked like the last mourners were inside, crossed the road and slipped into the church. She took a seat at the end of a pew at the back of the packed church. A beautiful, ornate wooden coffin rested on a plinth in front of the altar, decked in a spray of white flowers. The Douglas Brown family sat on the front pew, and as the church organ petered out, Erica noticed Diana looking frantically around as the church hushed. The vicar, dressed in crisp white robes, moved to the front and seemed to look for a signal that it was appropriate to begin. However, Simon shook his head. He then leaned in under the brim of Diana's huge hat, where they seemed to confer. Linda leaned in on the other side and joined the discussion. Erica realized what they were talking about. David was missing from the pew. Linda then got up, and standing at the front in full view of the congregation, just a few feet from Andrea's coffin, placed a call on her phone. The vicar was now waiting awkwardly by the altar. Linda said a few words before being cut off. She tried the number again and held the phone out to her father. "Linda, Linda," said Simon, beckoning her over. Linda huffed and stood her ground before relenting and walking over. Her father took the phone and the conversation became quite heated. Erica couldn't make out what was being said, but his angry tone reverberated around the church. The congregation was now shifting uneasily. The scene juxtaposed uncomfortably with a polished flower-topped coffin. The murmur of Simon's voice stopped abruptly, and Erica shifted in her pew to see what was happening. It was then that she heard, from her seat by the door, the faint sound of a mobile phone ringtone. Simon stood and moved off to the side of the church, a phone to his ear. Erica rose from her seat and slipped out of the church. Houses and shops were heavily built up nearby, leaving the courtyard out front and a thin strip of flagstones along one side of the church, which backed onto a high wall. David stood by the high wall with an unlit cigarette between his teeth. He tucked his phone inside his suit jacket. Erica moved over to him. "Need a light?" she asked, pulling out her cigarettes and lighter. He peered at her for a second, and then leaned in to her lighter, cupping his hands around the flame and puffing furiously as the end of the cigarette glowed red. Erica lit one herself and took a drag. "You okay?" she asked, tucking her cigarettes back in her coat pocket. David was painfully thin with sunken cheeks. His skin was honey-coloured, and there was a smattering of acne under his cheekbones. Despite this, his face was still handsome. He had the same brown eyes and full lips as Andrea. He squinted at Erica and shrugged. "Why aren't you in there for the service?" asked Erica. "It's all bullshit. My parents have planned this pretentious tribute, which is nothing to do with who Andrea was. She was a slut. She was loud and crass, and she had the attention span of an insect. But she was so good, so much fun to have around. I hate that phrase, 'she lit up a room.' It's trotted out all the time, but it was true of her. God, why did it have to be Andrea and not Lit—" His voice trailed off, and he looked ashamed. "Linda?" "No, I didn't mean that. Although I think Linda is so desperate for attention, she'd quite like to be brutally murdered. It would be more interesting to write on her Facebook profile than, 'I work as a florist and I like cats.'" David began to cry. "Shit, shit, shit, I vowed I wouldn't use these," he said, pulling a little pack of tissues from his pocket. "Look, David, you'll regret it if you don't go in there. Trust me, you need closure. Another overused phrase, I know." David blew his nose and pulled another tissue from the pack. "Why are you here?" he asked. "I've come to pay my respects. You know, my parents blame you for the media coverage. And what do you think?" "I think Andrea was always honest about dating men, about loving sex." "What about Giles?" "He wanted a trophy wife. A nice thoroughbred to mix up the gene pool. Too many cousins have married in his family. You must have noticed he's a little carny." "Carny? Little carnival circus folk?" "Right. Sorry, I'm being an ass. You've got the right to be one, today of all days, said Erica.
Yes, and you've caught the killer, Marco Frost.
Erica took a drag of her cigarette.
You don't think he's the killer, do you?
How's your mum coping? Asked Erica.
If you want to change the subject, choose a less stupid question.
You look far from stupid, though, said David, taking a deep drag on his cigarette.
Okay,
said Erica, pulling out a copy of the photo of Andrea in the bar with the dark-haired man.
Have you ever seen this man?
Smooth segue, said David.
David, please, it's important, said Erica.
She watched his face. He took the photo and chewed his lip.
No.
You're sure?
Yes.
Because Linda was there that night as well.
Well, I wasn't, said David.
I don't believe this, said a voice.
Erica turned and saw Simon was approaching across the courtyard. His head was tilted to one side, and his brown eyes flashed with anger. Diana teetered behind on high heels, her hat and shades giving little away.
Do you have no respect?
He said, squaring up to Erica, his face close to hers. She refused to be intimidated and stared back at him.
David, why are you out here?
Said Diana when she reached them, her voice breaking.
I'm asking David if he's seen this man, a man I believe,
started Erica. Simon snatched the photo, crushing it into a ball and throwing it down. He grabbed Erica's arm and started to drag her across the courtyard.
I'm sick of you fucking around in my business, he shouted.
Erica tried to pull away from his grip, but he held on fast and kept dragging her towards the road.
I'm doing this for you. For Andrea, said Erica.
No, you're doing this to advance your grubby little career. If I catch you near my family again, there'll be a restraining order. My lawyer says I have grounds.
They reached the curb just as a taxi was pulling past. Simon put up his arm and it dived into the space in front of them. He wrenched open the door and shoved Erica inside, cracking her head on the door as he did.
Take this cunt far away,
he spat through the driver's window, throwing down a £50 note. Erica stared at him through the door. His brown eyes were raging.
You all right, love? Said the taxi driver, looking at her through the rearview mirror.
Yes, just go, she said. The taxi pulled out into the traffic, and Erica watched Simon Douglas Brown glaring after her from the curb. David was slowly walking back to the church entrance, his mother's arm hooked through his. Erica rubbed her arm through her leather jacket, throbbing from Simon's powerful grip. Chapter 46 Erica arrived at Broccoli Crematorium a few hours later. It was on a small residential street, set back from the main road and within walking distance of her flat. She walked along the winding driveway, past tall evergreen trees, and saw Sergeant Wolfe outside the glass double doors of the crematorium. He was dressed in an ill-fitting suit, his jowly cheeks red from the cold. "Thanks for coming, boss," he said.
"It was a good idea," she said.
She took his arm as they went inside. The chapel was pleasant, if a little institutional. The soft red curtains and carpet were faded, and the rows of wooden seating were a little chipped. At the front was a small cardboard coffin placed on a box with wood panelling, which, on closer inspection, was a conveyor belt. A middle-aged Indian social worker sat in the front row with Ivy's three grandchildren. They had been cleaned up. The two girls were wearing matching blue dresses, and the little boy was wearing a suit a little large for him. They scowled at Erica and Wolf with the same wariness they reserved for the rest of the world. Three more mourners sat near the back, the large woman Erica had seen at the pub with Ivy, and another thin, hard-faced woman who had yellow blonde hair topped by 3 inches of black roots. Seated behind them was the landlord of the Crown. His strawberry blonde hair had been combed flat, and he was just as big and imposing in a smart suit. He nodded at Erica as they slipped into seats near the door. A priest rose and rattled through a respectful but impersonal service, calling her Ivy Norton throughout. Everyone was encouraged to say the Lord's Prayer. And then Erica was surprised that Wolf got up and squeezed past her. He went to the lectern and put on a pair of reading glasses. He took a deep breath and started to speak. When I am gone, release me, let me go. I have so many things to see and do. You mustn't tie yourself to me with too many tears, but be thankful we had so many good years. I gave you my love, and you can only guess how much you've given me in happiness. I thank you for the love that you have shown, but now it is time I travelled on alone. So grieve for me a while if grieve you must. Then let your grief be comforted by trust. It is only for a while that we must part, so treasure the memories within your heart. I won't be far away, for life goes on, and if you need me, call and I will come. Though you can't see or touch me, I will be near, and if you listen with your heart, you'll hear all my love around you, soft and clear. And then, when you come this way alone, I'll greet you with a smile and a welcome home. When Wolf finished, Erica was tearful and felt almost angry. The reading had been a touching and beautiful thing to do, but she had expected to sit through a sad but inevitable funeral. Wolf's reading had moved her deeply and transported her to a place she didn't want to go. When Wolf came back to his seat, he saw Erica crying, gave her an awkward nod and made for the door. Music then played, and Ivy's coffin rolled towards the curtain, which opened and closed with a whir. Wolf was waiting by a circle of small empty flower beds outside the main entrance when Erica emerged. "All right, boss." "Yeah, fine. That poem was beautiful," she said. "I just found it on the internet. It's called To Those Whom I Love and Those Who Love Me by Anon." "I thought Ivy deserved something to see her off," he said, embarrassed. "You come into the wake," said a voice. They turned to see the landlord from the Crown. "There's a wake?" asked Erica. "Well, a few drinks, Ivy was a regular." Erica's eye was caught by the two women, fat and thin. They stood smoking under a tree in the small memorial gardens. "Hang on, I'll be back in a sec," she said. She hurried over, pulling out a copy of the photo of Andrea and the dark-haired man from her bag. "You've got a nerve," said the large woman when Erica reached them. "I need to ask you," started Erica. But the woman tilted her head back and spat in her face. "You've got a nerve to sit there sobbing your crocodile tears when you as good as killed Ivy, you bitch!" She stalked away, leaving the ratty blonde to stare at Erica's shock. "Yeah, and we don't know anything," she said, eyeing the photo before moving off after her large companion. Erica fumbled in her bag for a tissue and wiped her face. When she came back, she saw Wolf had gone, but the landlord was waiting for her. "Your mate got a call and had to go," he said. "You fancy a drink?" "You really want me back in your pub after last time?" "Oh, I dunno, I seem to be drawn to difficult blondes." He grinned and shrugged. "Come on, you owe me. I got you out of a sticky spot." "As tempting as being picked up at a wake is, sorry, I've got to head off." "Suit yourself," he said. "Is that who you're after? George Mitchell?" Erica stopped in her tracks.
"What?"
"That picture," he said. "What's George been up to now?" "You know this man?" He laughed. "I know of him. I wouldn't count him as a friend, though." Erica held the photo up. "This man is called George Mitchell." "Yes, and now you're worrying me. He's not someone you want to fuck around with. This isn't going to come back on me, is it?"
"No. Do you know where he lives?"
"No, and that's all I'm going to say. I don't know anything else. I never spoke to you, okay? I'm serious, okay?"
"Yes, okay," said Erica. All talk of the drink had vanished, and she watched him walk out of the crematorium, get in his car and drive away.
Erica turned to look back at the low building with its immaculately manicured grounds. A steam of black smoke trailed from a long tall chimney. "Go on, Ivy, now you are free to fly," said Erica excitedly. "I think I've just found the bastard who did this to you."
Chapter 47. It was shortly after 10 p.m, and Erica had left several messages for Moss, Peterson, Crane, and even Wolf. No one had been available when she'd called Lewisham Row, and she'd left messages on their mobile phones. She had no clue if they were working still, but guessed that unlike her,
They all had social lives outside work. When she'd come back from the funeral, she'd headed for the coffee shop and searched for George Mitchell online. Nothing had come back on the George Mitchell she was interested in finding. She went to the fridge to pour herself another glass of wine, but saw the bottle was empty. She suddenly felt tired. She needed sleep. Erica switched off the light, went to the bathroom and took a long hot shower. When she climbed out of the shower, the combination of the cold air and whirling steam irritated her. She missed the luxurious bathroom of her house, which was now rented out. And she also missed the house in general. Her furniture, her old bed, the garden. She tried the extractor fan once more, and then rubbed at the mirror, wiping away the condensation. She decided if she didn't hear from someone by morning, she would pay a visit to Lewisham Row Station. As she climbed into bed, she tried Peterson again and then Moss. She left messages for both of them, repeating that she knew the name of the man in the photo. Then, feeling frustrated and pissed off, Erica switched off the light. Shortly before midnight, Erica was sleeping softly. Commuters from the last train had walked past the flat, and the road outside settled into silence. A soft glow from the street lights bled through the living room, falling on the back wall of the bathroom. Erica rolled over in her sleep, shifting her head on the pillow. She didn't hear the sound of the ventilator fan in the bathroom as it popped out of the wall and swung from side to side with a scrape. Erica woke suddenly from a dreamless sleep. It was dark, and her bedside clock glowed red, showing 00:13. She shifted her pillow and had turned over to go back to sleep when she heard a very faint creak. She held her breath. The creak came again. A few seconds passed, and then she heard a rustling of paper in the living room. Then she heard a drawer being opened very quietly. Her eyes darted around the bedroom for a weapon, something to defend herself with. There was nothing. Then she spied the bedside lamp. It was made of metal, and heavy like a small candlestick. Very slowly and quietly, without taking her eye off the door, she leant down beside the bed and eased out the plug. Holding her breath, she wound the cable round the base of the lamp and heard a faint creak outside her bedroom door. Bracing the lamp in her hand, she eased herself off the bed. She heard a creak further down the hall, moving away from the door. She stopped and listened. Silence. Erica moved lightly to where her phone was charging on the floor by the wall and switched it on, wishing she'd had a landline put in. She heard another creak. This time it was coming from outside the bathroom. Part of her just wanted whoever it was to realize that there was nothing worth taking and then to leave. As Erica crept towards the door, taking care to lay her bare feet down evenly and softly on the wooden floor, her phone blared out its start-up tone. It rang through the silence. Shit, what a fucking idiot mistake. Her heart started to race. There was silence, and then the sound of footsteps walking towards the bedroom. It was now a heavy footfall, confident, no creeping about and scared to be heard. It happened suddenly. The door was kicked open, and a figure, head to toe in black, rushed at her and gripped her by the throat with a black leather glove. Eyes glittered through a balaclava. Erica was shocked at the power in the hand, and she felt her throat and windpipe crushed. She grappled for the lamp, but it slipped from her grasp onto the bed. The figure pushed her back onto the bed, all the time gripping her throat. Erica kicked, swinging her leg, but the figure twisted deftly to one side, pinning both of her legs down with a hip. She reached up with her hands, trying to grab at the balaclava, but the figure pinned her upper arms down painfully with sharp elbows. The hands tightened around her neck. She couldn't breathe, couldn't do anything. She felt drool from her open mouth running down her chin. Blood seemed trapped in her face and head, and the hands kept squeezing, squeezing so hard that she felt her head might explode before she suffocated. The figure was so quiet, so calm, breathing rhythmically, arms trembling from the effort of maintaining the grip on her. The pain was now unbearable. Thumbs on her trachea, pushing, crushing. She was starting to see black spots in her vision. They spread and grew. And then Erica's doorbell rang. The grip on her throat tightened, and the last of her vision began to fail. The bell rang again, longer. There was a bang on the door, and she heard Moss's voice.
"Are you there, boss? Sorry to call so late, but I need to talk."
She was going to die. She knew it. She was overpowered. She flexed her fingers and felt the lamp on the bed beside her. Her vision was flooding with blackness. She summed up all the energy she could and pushed her fingers against the lamp. It budged a little. Moss knocked once more. Erica used the last of her energy and shoved at the lamp. It slid off the bed and hit the floor with a crash, the bulb shattering.
"Boss?" said Moss, hammering on the door again. "Boss? What's happening? I'm going to break down the door."
Suddenly the grip loosened on Erica's neck, and the figure fled from her bedroom. Erica lay there gagging, attempting to draw air into her ravaged throat, down into her lungs. There was a thud as Moss attempted to break down the door. Erica gasped once, twice, heaved, and as a little oxygen reached the rest of her body, her vision swam back into view. With a superhuman will, she crawled to the edge of the bed, tumbling off onto the wooden floor with a crash, feeling shards of the broken bulb pierce her forearm. She scrambled towards the door, not caring if the figure was still there, not caring. There was now a louder thud as Moss shouldered the door. On the third attempt, it burst open with a crack and a splinter.
"Jesus, boss!"
shouted Moss, hurrying towards where she was lying on the floor. Erica was still gagging and clutching her throat. Blood from the cut poured down her arm and was smeared over her chin and throat. Her face was grey and she sank back in the doorway.
"Boss, shit, what happened?"
"Blood. Just my arm," Erica croaked. "Someone was here." Chapter 48. Moss moved fast, calling for backup, and within minutes Erica's flat was teeming with police. Then a team of CSIs arrived and took swabs from her fingernails and neck. And then they said they'd need to take all her clothes. The elderly lady next door had been reluctant to open her front door to Moss, but when she'd seen the police, ambulance and forensics surging up and down the stairs, her attitude had softened and she'd let them in. Erica wore a set of white overalls. Everything in her flat was now part of a crime scene. Two paramedics came through and bandaged her arm as she sat on the little sofa in the old lady's front room. Two budgies hopped and pecked in a cage high up on the wall.
"Oh, dear, would you like a cup of tea?"
the woman asked, as a male and female paramedic examined Erica. "I don't think hot tea is a good idea," said the male paramedic. Erica caught sight of herself in a gilt mirror above the mantelpiece, which was tilted at an angle to show the whole living room. Her throat and neck were swollen with angry red weals. The whites of her eyes were pink and streaming. In the corner of her left eye, a spot of red bloomed. "You've burst a small blood vessel in your left eye," confirmed the paramedic, shining a pen torch into her eyes. "Can you open wide for me? It's going to hurt, but wide as you can manage, please." Erica swallowed painfully and opened her mouth. The paramedic shone the torch into her throat. "Okay, that's good. Now, can you keep your mouth open and make a sighing noise?" Erica tried, but began to gag. "Okay, easy does it."
"I don't see any evidence of laryngeal fracture or upper airway edema."
"That's good, yes?" asked Moss, who had appeared in the doorway. The paramedic nodded. "How about a nice cold drink? I've got some blackcurrant cordial in the fridge," suggested the old lady, who stood by in a long dressing gown, a neat row of blue curlers under her hairnet. "Just a little plain water," said the female paramedic. "Do you have any other injuries apart from the arm?" she added, turning back. Erica shook her head, wincing.
"Just stay put for now, boss. I'm going to talk to the team who are inside your flat," said Moss, leaving.
"We'll be downstairs waiting. We'll need to get that arm sewn up," said the female paramedic, who had applied a pressure bandage to the cut. Erica nodded as they clipped up their small first aid box and left. The old lady came back in with a small glass of water. Erica took it gratefully and gingerly sipped. She coughed and choked, and the old lady rushed forward with a tissue. "Try again, dear. Take very tiny sips," she said, holding the tissue under Erica's chin. Erica managed a tiny sip, but it burned. The woman went on, "This area. When I first moved here in 1957, we all knew each other. You could leave your door open, we had a real community. But these days, not a week goes by without you hearing there's been a robbery or a break-in.
You see, I've got bars in all my windows, and I have a personal response alarm.
She tapped a small red button round her neck. There was a knock on the front door. The woman got up and came back a few moments later.
"There's a tall black fellow who says he's a police officer," said the woman cautiously, coming into the room with Peterson.
"Geez, boss," he said.
Erica smiled weakly.
"You're his boss?" asked the woman. Erica shrugged and then nodded. "You're a policewoman."
"She's a detective chief inspector," said Peterson. "We've got a ton of officers doing house to house, but nothing. Whoever it was scrammed."
"My God, and to think this happened to a detective chief inspector. What about the rest of us?"
"Whoever did it must have no fear."
"What are you?"
asked the old lady of Peterson.
"I'm a policeman."
"Yes, dear. What rank are you?"
"Detective inspector," said Peterson.
"You know who you remind me of?" said the woman. "What's that program about the black policeman?"
"Luther,"
said Peterson, trying not to look annoyed.
"Oh, yes, Luther. He's very good. Has anyone ever told you you look a bit like him?"
Despite everything that had happened, Erica smiled.
"People like you normally do," said Peterson.
"Oh, thank you,"
said the old lady, not getting what he meant.
"I do try to watch quality drama on television, none of those reality shows as they call them. What rank is Luther?"
I think he's a DCI. Look."
"Well, if he can do it, so can you,"
said the old lady, patting him on the arm.
"Would you please excuse us for a minute, madam?" asked Peterson.
The woman nodded and left. He rolled his eyes. Erica tried to grin, but it hurt.
"Geez, boss, I'm so sorry."
Peterson pulled out his notebook and thumbed through to a clean page. "Was anything taken?" Erica shook her head and then shrugged. She could only nod or shake her head, and Peterson asked all the standard questions. But beyond the figure being tall and strong, she couldn't give any information.
"It's pathetic,"
swallowed Erica painfully. "I should have..." she mimed, pulling off a balaclava.
"Boss, it's okay. It always seems simple in hindsight," said Peterson.
Moss came back in, carrying the housing of the extractor fan.
"He got in using the ventilation pipe," she said.
"It was, I don't know, I think it was a him,"
croaked Erica.
"Boss, they're going to be working through the night with forensics. Do you have anywhere you can stay?"
asked Peterson.
"Hotel," croaked Erica.
"No, boss, you're staying with me," said Moss. "I've got a spare room. I've also got something you can borrow to wear. You look like you're about to go out clubbing in the late 1990s.
Erica tried to laugh again, but it was painful. In a weird, warped way, she felt pleased. He'd come for her. She was on to him.
Chapter 49. The figure sped down Camberwell High Street, screaming and raging inside the car, not caring about the speed.
"I was so fucking close, so close."
The figure's nostrils flared, eyes streaming with tears. The tears were of rage and pain. The exit from DCI Foster's flat had been terrifying. Slithering down the back wall of the building, barely managing to hold on, and then crashing down onto the brick wall before crumpling onto the pavement. The figure hadn't worried about the pain, but kept running through the darkness out into the streetlights, not caring who saw, just running drenched in sweat, the fear and pain joining together for a final burst of mad energy. DCI Foster had been so close. The light in her eyes had just been starting to dim, and then... A set of red traffic lights was hurtling towards the windscreen. As the figure slammed on the brakes, the car screamed to a halt, just overshooting a crossroads with a pub on the corner. A group of students stepped off the pavement and surged around the car, laughing and pointing. "Shit, I'm still wearing the balaclava." Some students hammered on the back of the car as they passed. A group of girls peered through the windscreen as they walked in front of the car. "Calm down, pull it off, act like them, a stupid student." The figure pulled the balaclava off with a flourish and made goofy faces at the students through the window. The madness must have shone through, though, because the group of girls screamed and shied away as one guy lurched forward and threw up beside the window. The lights turned green,
and the figure floored the accelerator, screeching away towards the Oval and Blackfriars Bridge. She didn't see anything. She couldn't have. I had my face covered. I had my face covered. The fear was replaced with anger. She denied me the kill. Chapter 50 Moss took Erica to Lewisham Hospital, where her throat was x-rayed, and the cut in her arm was given 12 stitches. She was ordered to rest for a week and, more importantly, not to speak. It was after 4 in the morning when Moss drove them back. The adrenaline that had been flooding through Erica's body had ceased, and a crashing tiredness overwhelmed her. She was shaking when she followed Moss through the small front gate of a smart terraced house in Ladywell. A pretty blonde woman opened the front door, cradling a small, dark-haired boy wearing blue pyjamas. "He woke up, so I thought you could say a quick hello before I put him back down," she said. "Sorry I missed bedtime," said Moss, taking the boy in her arms as they stepped indoors. She planted a huge kiss on his cheek. He rubbed his eyes shyly and smiled. "This is my wife Celia and our son Jacob," said Moss, as they came into the cosy hallway. "Hi, Erica," said Celia, not quite knowing how to deal with the sight of Erica's battered neck, pink eyes, and the fact she was wearing crime scene overalls.
"Are you a spacewoman?"
asked Jacob, a serious look on his little face. Erica's face broke into a weak smile, and they all laughed. It broke the ice.
"No,"
croaked Erica. "Yes, no criminals in space. I bet it would be very peaceful," said Celia. "I'm just going to put this little one to bed. Please make yourself at home, Erica. Do you want to have a shower?" Erica nodded. "Kate, get Erica one of the towels from the airing cupboard whilst I put Jacob back down. Say night-night, Jacob."
"Night-night, Jacob," he said with a grin.
"The bed in the spare room is made up, and I've put the little heater in there," added Celia. Moss gave Celia and Jacob a kiss and they left the room.
"Nice family,"
croaked Erica, perching on the edge of the sofa, not quite knowing what to do with herself. "The doctor said no talking, boss." "Thanks. I'm very lucky. Jacob came along a few years ago. Celia gave birth to him. I'd love to have a little girl. We always said we'd have one each. It's just work gets in the way." Erica croaked something. "What was that?" Erica shook her head frustrated and croaked, "Don't leave it too late. Kids." Moss nodded sagely. She went to the kitchen and came back with 2 glasses of orange juice. Erica's had a straw. "You look like you could use some sugar." They sipped for a moment. "I got one of the night duty officers to run George Mitchell through the database. Nothing." Erica swallowed and shook her head. "Boss, someone just tried to kill you. Do you think it's connected?" Erica felt like she was done. She didn't know if it was shock or exhaustion, but she didn't care. She wanted sleep. She nodded.
"Shower?"
she asked, looking down at herself in the overalls.
"Sure thing, yeah, boss," said Moss.
She regarded Erica for a moment, worry mixed with a little pity. Erica stood under the shower for a long time, her bandaged arm extended to avoid the water. She inhaled the steam, trying to take away the terrible rawness in her throat. Moss had lent her a pair of pyjamas, and Erica pulled them on. She looked at herself in the bathroom mirror. Her eyes bulged out with a pinky tinge, and her throat was now so swollen that it gave her a toadish look. She opened the medicine cabinet, but there were only painkillers in there and night nurse. Erica had hoped for some anti-anxiety medication or sleeping pills. She gingerly took some night nurse, the pain almost unbearable as she swallowed. When she emerged from the bathroom, the house was dark and quiet, save for a small nightlight in the hallway. On her way to the spare room, she stopped outside Jacob's bedroom. His door was ajar, and he was sound asleep under a blue blanket. A mobile turned above his bed, soft light sliding across the walls as a lullaby played. Moss put her life on the line most days, mingling with the crazies out there with knives and guns, vendettas and grudges. Jacob slept, his chest slowly rising and falling. His world was his 2 mummies, his toys, the mobile slowly turning above his head, its calming tune winding down. For the first time, Erica questioned if it was all worth it. You arrest one bad guy, and 10 more fill the void. She found the tiny back bedroom at the end of the house, climbed into the single bed, pulled the covers over